Welcome. This is the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast with host Rob Giannino, where we have great conversation with really awesome experts from within the fly fishing community. You see, the fly fishing lifestyle is a journey, and we're glad you're on this journey with us. Check out flyfishingjourneys.com for more podcasts, journal-style blog posts, and a link to our social media community. And please subscribe on your favorite podcast player. Here's your host, Rob Giannino.
Thanks, Josh. And on this episode of the FFJ podcast, we are in the San Francisco area in the Sonoma Valley on the Napa River, podcasting right on the river. I was honored to get an invitation from Casey Rolig of Buff to fish for striped bass on the Napa River. Casey is a passionate fly fisherman. He covers the opportunities available on the Napa River, as well as the greater San Francisco and Northern California areas. Sun protection is crucial for the amount of time we as fly fishermen spend on the water. As a diehard fan of Buff products, I additionally asked him to review the Buff lineup. When you combine sun protection and style, no one does it better than Buff. And before we get to the podcast, I want to thank some of our key sponsors. Norvice. Are you a fly tire or want to learn? You can find out more information on this incredible rotary vice system at nor-vice.com. And The Fly Fishing Show. The full lineup of shows is at flyfishingshow.com. Now, let's kick it to the pod. I'm here with Casey Rolig, who's the media marketing manager of Buff USA, and he has invited me to come out and do some striper fishing in the Napa River. Casey, thanks for being on our show.
Hey, this is awesome.
Can you believe it? Here we are in the beautiful Napa River. We're going to do some striper fishing today, and something I've been so looking forward to. We're between shows, so we're up at the Seattle show in Linwood, and we're on our way down to the Pleasanton show, and you guys are just, Buff is located just right in Santa Rosa.
Yeah, we're in Santa Rosa, California, about an hour north of San Francisco. Today, we're on the Napa River, as Rob said. That's pretty much located in the heart of the Napa Valley, near Sonoma, about an hour from our office, about an hour from San Francisco. And a lot of people don't know, but this is definitely a sport fishing river, loaded with striped bass, sturgeon, if that's what you're into, and a few other species that you might encounter along the way.
Now, striped bass, now, you have them right here in the Napa River?
We do, yeah. I believe striped bass were introduced to California many years ago, to the California Delta, which is what most people think of when they think of striped bass in Northern California. That's where you can go and get some good numbers, high-quality fish. It's just a melting pot, breeding ground of sorts for stripers, largemouth, salmon breeding ground. A lot of Northern California rivers converge in the California Delta. So we're just kind of an offshoot of that. It's a short river. You could take a boat to downtown San Francisco in just a few hours, you know, cruising at a couple knots. Yeah, we got a lot to offer here locally in the Napa and Bay Area.
So we were talking about those valleys. So how does like the Napa and Sonoma valleys work?
Yeah, so Sonoma Valley, that's where I live, and that's where our Buff office is located. It's just a little bit west of Napa. Let's say about a 40-minute drive from the Pacific Ocean, so from the coast. That's where we have a lot of coastal rivers for steelhead and salmon. You know, the historically significant Russian River is about 15 minutes from our office. Used to host some of the biggest numbers of king salmon and still has a decent steelhead population. Of course, rivers north of there where you just drove through and bypassed, probably they were a little bit off color, so I don't think you missed much in terms of fishing. But, you know, the Eel River, the Gualala, what did you think about that area?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, coming down through the Oregon coast to the Northern California coast, I mean, those landscapes just epic. Like rolling waves for what seems like miles. Sometimes you'll get these big erratic stones right all through the bays. It's among the most majestic, beautiful scenery I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's definitely should be on anybody's bucket list to take a road trip, whether it's solo and a fishing trip or with a couple buddies, or take the family and just explore the coast. The redwoods, there's really nothing like the Northern California redwoods.
Just this whole, like you say, road trip bucket list. I mean, to come down, I mean, I would have never done that if I wasn't driving from the Seattle show down to like the San Francisco show. But when we talked about making this day available, I said, well, let me time up some kind of sightseeing along the way. And so I just looked, wow, that would be a sweet road trip to tug the coast the whole way down and to stop at these little quaint towns. Some of them were surfer towns, and it really wasn't a ton of money. It wasn't that expensive. You can find very inexpensive ways
to see some of the most beautiful scenery in the world.
Yeah, and if you're fishing, I mean, and it's, you know, the middle of winter and you're encountering everything that, you know, you do when you steelhead fish, you're better off finding, you know, a cheap hotel, you know, 50, 60 bucks a night.
Yeah.
That's your kind of camp for the night to dry the waiters and dry yourself and, you know, find some cheap eats and then, you know, start the day at the crack of dawn and, and fish, you know, usually most of the day because it's pretty dreary. So you got a good chance from sun up to sundown.
Yeah, and you know, cuz it's the off season for a lot of these touristy type towns, it would be really raging in the summer. I mean, there was a lot of people around, but it wasn't super busy, and like you say, it's off season, so the prices are not that expensive at all to make that huge road trip. And we're talking about like from Oregon all the way down to San Francisco. Just the coastline is spectacular.
Yeah, and there's a decent amount of guides that spend their winters on the coast. I mean, it is temperamental. You know, as we just encountered, rivers are blowing out. You know, we're on the Napa River right now trying to find some clear water, and I think we might have just came across some here in the northern end of the river near downtown Napa. But otherwise, we were dodging a few full-size trees in the river on our way up.
Yeah. And you mentioned, too, because you have those two kind of valleys, right? You have the Sonoma Valley, and then parallel is the Napa Valley.
Yeah, like I was saying, Sonoma Valley comes first. You know, the heart of modern day, you know, winemaking really did start in Sonoma. A lot of people don't know that who are into wine. And then you come up over the Mayacamas, and then you fall into the Napa Valley, where we're at here. And that's only about an hour from Pleasanton, where the show's going
to
be at.
Yeah. And so how far of a boat ride is this all the way to, say, the Golden Gate Bridge?
Whew. You know, it depends on the boat, of course. We would never take my 14-foot Boston Whaler there. That'd be an experience. But I'd say, you know, in maybe a seaworthy 20, 30-foot boat, we could get to the Golden Gate in maybe 3 or 4 hours.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little bit of a ride. You got to get it across that bay.
And a lot of people don't know, but, you know, the Bay Area, I mean, the bay right there in San Francisco is full of stripers. Lost Coast Outfitters is a fly shop in downtown San Francisco. If you're ever in the San Francisco area, you have a little bit of time to kill, don't hesitate to bring a rod and connect with them and see about wetting your line and hooking up with a striper or maybe a surf perch right below the Golden Gate Bridge. On the coast, heading south towards Pacifica, you've got a lot of options in San Francisco, believe it or not.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of the East Coasters, they may not realize how much of a striper opportunity it is here on the West Coast and in the greater San Francisco area. I mean, you mentioned, and you could catch like a 25-pound striper right there underneath the Golden Gate Bridge.
That's where they all come from. Yeah. I mean, there are resident fish, you know, that live in the Napa River, that live in the Delta, and they get, you know, of good size. But, you know, a majority of them, you know, the bigger fish are going to be migratory, and they're going to spend their days out in the ocean getting big and eating the plethora of fish there. And then they're going to come up to these tributaries or the Delta and the Bay to spawn. So, you know, the striper season, you know, most will say is September, October, November. You know, there's a decent summer run, or I guess I should say a spring run as well. But you can find them all year long, you know, depending on the body of water. And, you know, they might not always be those 20, 25 pounders. You get a lot of schoolies, but they'll put a bend in your 8-weight and you'll think that they're a good sized fish until you see them.
So if I'm living in, say, the San Francisco or one of the valleys, what are some fishing opportunities outside of this striper fishery?
Yeah, so we talked a lot of you know, really hyper local fishing, and that's great to get your fix, and I'm a huge fan. But the majority of us, you know, trout is king, and so we're gonna head up to the Sierras or the Shasta area to target trout. And so you're talking maybe a 3 to 5 hour, you know, drive. So normally a weekend trip, 2 or 3 days, you can get a world class you know, trout water. So rainbows, browns, Freestone Rivers, Tailwaters, great guide network. You know, there's a lot of information on Northern California fishing. You know, take the good with the bad, I guess. I mean, there's always a report. There's always something on Instagram. So,
yeah.
But there's still a lot of secrets to be had for sure.
You mentioned the Sierras. I've actually had a chance to fish up around the Bishop area.
Oh, yeah.
In the High Sierras. It is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, there's 5 different, you know, kind of species of trout in Northern California, and, you know, there's the golden trout, and there's some kind of cutthroat strains, and
yep.
Yeah, fun to target.
Have you ever caught a golden?
I have not. No, I've not spent much time. There's been some really cool videos on protecting the golden trout put on by some Northern California film producers that are worth checking out. If you just type in California golden trout.
Yeah, yeah.
Put on some by California Trout, the conservation organization, kind of works alongside like a Trout Unlimited.
Right.
Yeah.
It's on my list. I was supposed to be fishing and catching goldens. I went on this hiking trip up in the Bishop area, and we went and get our licenses, our permits, to go hiking and fishing, and they told us we needed to take a beer can. Now, we're not talking about drinking beer can. We're talking about a metal cylinder that you stash all your food in and hang to keep the bears away at night.
Yeah.
So they said, well, to go up into this neck of the woods, which where we wanted to go, where we needed to go to catch the golden, we had to take a beer can. And my buddy, who was kind of leading this trip because he has a ton of experience in the area, hiking and fishing around Bishop, he said, okay, yeah, well, we ended up putting it for somewhere else. He says, there's no way I'm carrying that beer can up this mountain. Because they're heavy.
Yeah.
And we have a huge hike
ahead of
us.
You're not ready for it.
Yeah, they're no fun. We end up not getting the beer can, and we were halfway up this long hike, and we saw a ranger. And he says, oh, no, there's a ranger. So he's like, follow me. And I'm like 22 at the time. He's follow me. So we went up on this this little ridge. Well, sure enough, there was no trees on this ridge, and we just put ourselves in smack dab view of this ranger. We just announced that we were here. He comes up to us and he says, "Oh, hey, hi, great. Can I see your permits?" Okay, we showed him our permits. He says, "Okay, great. Can I see your bear can?" Well, we don't have a bear can. Well, he turned us around and sent us back to the bottom of that hill, and we never got to catch that elusive golden trout.
Still sounds like a fun trip.
It was a fun trip. We actually went up a different way. We went up to these lakes called the Baboon Lakes, and you're like nestled right at the top, at the peak of this incredible Sierra mountain. And it's like snow covered at the top, and there's all the runoff right there in these little baboon lakes. There's five baboon lakes, and you catch yourself as many trout as you want, and you have a little trout lunch.
Oh, yeah. Those high mountain lakes. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And so, those golden trout, a lot of people, think that all trout are definitely susceptible to, of course, disease and environmental impact. We all know that. But I was once told by not a biologist, but a gentleman who'd helped biologists do a lot of research with golden trout. And he said, you wouldn't believe that these fish will burrow themselves in the mud to survive, in drought conditions. He said, you'd think that they need always, clear crystal water. And of course, that's only helpful for reproduction and feeding and things like that. But, think about a trout, burrowed in the mud, like a catfish or a, mud guppy or something like that, and could live better part of a season, until the rains come, just surviving kind of stuck like that.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. He said, believe it or not.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we do a little fishing?
Yeah.
And we'll pick up our podcast in just a short bit. So hang tight, folks. We're going to do a little fishing, and we're going to come back with you and talk more about fishing in the greater San Francisco area.
From the original prototype designed in the late 70s to our brand new Legacy stainless steel vise released in 2018, Norvise has been committed to one thing: efficiency. Tie better flies faster. A long-standing slogan with the company truly encompasses what the Norvise fly tying system does. What it means is to tie a fly in less time and more consistently due to the ease and benefits engineered into this outstanding system. For more information, please visit www.nor-vice.com. Norvice, the most innovative fly tying system on the market.
Casey, we're here on the Napa River, and what would be a good setup for fishing for these stripers?
Man, it's really simple. That's the good thing compared to other types of fishing. I'd say a 7 or an 8 weight. Medium action rod, sinking line. I like to use an Airflow sniper line.
Okay.
In their type 3 and their type 5 is usually what I have rigged on the boat. That's what we got today. You've got
so
the 5,
like 1
I've
to
got
2
the 3.
Inch per second, 3 to 5 inch per
second. Yeah. Another simple go-to that a lot of people use is just like T14 and then, a running line in front of that.
Who makes the T14?
A couple different companies do. There's like a custom cut T14 that Rio and Airflow both produce where you can have a 20, 30 foot head if you want, depending on the leader and the fly system, you're using. Speaking of leader, usually 3 to 5 feet of just straight 10 to 16 pound mono. Flies can definitely vary on the Napa and, of course, the Delta, but I like to use chartreuse and white can be a go-to. Kind of a white and silver yellow combo works well. You're talking to dumbbell eyes, you know, help get the fly down, kind of make a jigging motion. Any variation of the clouser works well. So you got to have that sinking line to get down. You know, we're fishing levee breaks. We're fishing banks. It really ranges on the section of the Napa you're on. So we're kind of in the upper end. So we're kind of just fishing perpendicular to the bank or even parallel at times. You get down into the sloughs and that's where you have these levee breaks where you get a lot of moving water. So yeah. For a trout guy, it's really easy to kind of figure out that type of fishing. Whereas this is kind of more like a bass or stillwater fishing.
Sure.
Where we're just targeting structure and depth changes.
Well, I love your little Boston Whaler here.
Yeah, this thing's great. 14-foot Whaler, probably made early 60s. Hull's been stripped of the console and everything like that. We've got a simple tiller motor. Bilge pump works on bullet connectors. You know, there's not a lot that can go wrong on this. 1981 Evinrude, 25 horse. It allows me to get into those sloughs that we were just talking about and kind of get in these muddy, nasty areas. A lot of people will fish like an 18, 20-foot Ranger on the river. That allows you to get to some other bodies of water as well. Like the Delta, you need a motor that they can get you from point A to point B a little faster than this does. And then the bank fishing opportunities are definitely to be had. There's some spots on the Napa River, but for your listeners, I think like the San Francisco Bay, and like we were talking about earlier, you can use the same rod setup. Some guys will use a switch rod with a shooting head, kind of use a two-handed casting style there. Same flies apply, and you can go for stripers and surf perch, which are kind of, they're called barred surf perch. They're like panfish in a way, so they fight really hard for their size and they take just a little bit smaller fly. Almost think like a bonefish fly, like a Crazy Charlie or something. Sure. Like that would work.
Well, this Bostonian feels at home in your Boston Whaler, man, so thank you.
Yeah, I thought that would be kind of fun.
Yeah, you said, man, I got a Boston Whaler. I said, oh, I'm in. It can't go wrong.
Yeah, we can do two guys on this, you on the bow, me on the stern here on this casting platform. And if you kind of know what you're doing with the fly rod, you can cast at the same time. Trolling motor kind of helps keep you in one spot. Sometimes we'll anchor up on certain points and levee breaks.
Yeah. Where are you from, Casey?
I'm from Marquette, Michigan.
Okay.
Pretty historically significant fly fishing area because of the author Robert Traver. John Volker was his name. Wrote Trout Madness, Trout Magic, Dances with Trout, I believe. Some really great kind of short stories on fly fishing. Great for kind of curing cabin fever.
He was from there.
He was from that area. He was a state Supreme Court judge. Just a character of sorts, loved an old-fashioned. And so growing up there, I learned in my late teens, you know, we had a narrow fishing window during the year, so trout kind of threw themselves at flies, which is great, you know, to learn how to fly fish. And I read every Orvis book I could, and it was just kind of when info was getting on the internet, so definitely digested that as much as I could.
When did you start fly fishing?
I think I was like 15 or 16.
Yeah.
This group of three buddies, one of their fathers, did some fly fishing and was a fly tyer, and we just started going out and fishing the Escanaba River. The rest is history, you know. I've made a career in fly fishing. The other one is a fly fishing guide in Missoula, Montana. The other one's a fishing bum in Missoula, Montana. So
that was a good start.
So all three
guys.
Of us are pretty much. I mean, I almost quit every hobby I had at the time when I found fly fishing.
It was that.
Yeah. And so I worked at a fly shop right out of college, believe it or not, for about 6 or 7 years. Did a lot of casting instruction, introduced a lot of people to the sport, did some on-stream demo/guiding, although I never really was a true guide in a traditional sense, but I would do kind of more seminars and taking groups of people and help, you know, 5-6 anglers at a time, you know, with their knots and how to read water. And it's a lot of fun, you know, getting somebody on their first fish.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's really rewarding.
And casting is what makes, you know, what defines our sport.
Did you go to college?
I did.
Where'd
yeah.
you go?
Yeah, I went to Northern Michigan University. It was in my hometown, so that was pretty easy.
Local.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a great university. Got a bachelor's degree in marketing, and now I'm, you know, media marketing manager at Buff. So, you know, it all kind of works out in
that's
the end.
That's so cool.
If you have, you know, somewhere where you, you know, a direction you plan to go.
Yeah, that's amazing. And so how did you get this position with Buff? I know you were working at the fly shop for all those years, and how did you kind of land with Buff? I mean, you're not only in fly fishing, but you're in skiing and outdoors and hiking. I mean, Buff products can be used on anything.
Yeah, so let's see here. I was leaving the fly shop world. It was really fishing that got me to Buff. You know, I knew that fishing was a huge part of the business. In fact, I thought it was way more than what I really realized when I started working there, that we are in so many different markets. From
niches.
From, yeah, snowboarding and skiing, trail running and ultra running, road running, yoga, hunting. I mean, you could probably name any outdoor sport and a number of indoor sports where our products can really help you out with sun protection, which is huge for us. You know, we're here in our buff gear right now. We've got our CoolNet UV on your neck, you know, a trucker cap to block the sun, and then our aqua gloves, you know, on our hands. And they all kind of serve a few different purposes. From today, it happens to be a little bit of warmth, you know, we need from it.
Yeah.
And sun protection, because the sun is still out on us. But back to get into to the company, yeah, I was really introduced to all these different sports and fell in love with a lot of them. But it was really, you know, fly fishing and that experience on the retail side that allowed me to get on the brand side.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that was really, really helpful to have the experience on both sides.
Was this media marketing manager, was this your first position within Buff, or did you get promoted from within?
Yeah, I was promoted to that. We had a need to fill there in kind of everything media for us. So think of that as social media. Our ambassadors are a form of media for us. So I work with all of our athletes and ambassadors at Buff. So that makes it a really unique role. I also work with all of our partnerships. We were talking earlier about, you know, some of the organizations in fishing that we work with, like the Casting for Recovery. There's a slew of other, you know, like Trout Unlimited that we work with, a lot of trail networks. So I get to kind of see full picture from the partnership side and then to the media side and be able to kind of tell that story.
Sure.
And produce that content.
Well, you talked about you're donating with like 900 Buffs for Casting for Recovery.
Yeah, we wanted every one of those participants to have a Buff product. You know, one is just kind of a keepsake from this experience. I mean, of course, they've gone through a lot, you know, recovering from breast cancer. But to be able to have this experience of going to a retreat, learning to fly fish, kind of celebrating this recovery, you know, with people that have gone through the same thing as you is really special. And so to have this keepsake, this product to take home with you. And also, you know, there's the side of it where it's you need to continue to protect yourself with sun protective items.
Right.
We all need to do more of that. We've all heard, you know, the stories of skin cancer, and it's something that can be prevented if we take the right measures early on, and it's never really too late. Like, we're wearing our Buff gloves because, you know, one, we don't want our hands to just wrinkle up after spending, you know, years on the water, but it's going to help in the long run.
On those Casting for Recovery Buffs, did you make a special design?
Yeah, so they have a logo. It's a repeating fly pattern that is a stimulator, dry fly.
And pink,
so
I'm guessing?
Well, there's a little bit of pink incorporated into it, but it's actually, their colors are blue and pink. So we'll, you know, give them some royalties for those sales. All the participants will be getting one as well. And
that's
you might
so
even
cool.
See it in some retailers of ours. So yeah, it's the start of a great thing. We've made some for them in the past, and they sell them on their website and give them out at, you know, certain kits and packages. So just continuing that. And then we just started working with Trout Unlimited as a business member. And we made a film featuring the California field director of Trout Unlimited, the Truckee Traptor, Dave Lass.
Oh, cool.
It's part of our Live More Now video series that we've done on fly fishing, trail running, skiers and snowboarding. It's really telling the story of people doing incredible things, kind of overcoming something in their life, whether it be injury, celebrating, you know, fatherhood, creating a women's trail running kind of media company, which was Trail Sisters. And so Trout Unlimited and Dave Lass were a great team to basically help us tell that story, or tell their story through our Live More Now video series.
That's so cool. And just thank you for what you're doing to give back to the fly fishing community, both with those nonprofits, both Casting for Recovery and Trout Unlimited, two great companies. Now, I know when we're talking about patterns there for your, like, your neckwear, for instance, you had sent us some awesome designs for, like, national parks. You've got Yellowstone, you've got Yosemite, you've got the Pacific Coast Trail, you have the Continental Divide. You have all these cool national parks and all these cool designs. How do you come up with the designs for your neckwear and your products?
Yeah, so we have a product manager that works with artists from all walks of life, whether it's a specialty artist that does prints and patterns for some of our more generic pieces, which is still wearable art. But we were just talking, you know, Derek DeYoung and A.D. Maddox and and Bugslinger are all artists that we have great relationships with to basically turn their product into wearable art. And so we as fly fishermen are all gear junkies and love, you know, something new. And if it's cool looking, that's even better. So, you know, you got the AD Mod-X striper pattern on your neck. You know, a guy from Boston loves to striper fish. Yeah. That's what we're doing right now. It kind of helps tell that story.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah. And I'm guessing that you have the original artwork, it gets scanned, and then the designers then turn it into something that can be then
printed. We put it on our template. You know, they give us, you know, basically have to digitize their art, you know, whether it was oil or watercolor or whatever their kind of medium is. We just did one with the Banff International Film and Book Festival, worked with an artist called named John Fellows, and he's a woodcut artist. So he takes pieces of wood or foam, and he'll actually cut his design out with an X-Acto knife.
Okay.
And then he'll actually do a print transfer onto that. So you can kind of see that kind of raw, that style come through in the art. And then we scanned that in, it's digitized, and put it on our template. And
it becomes a buff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all made in our own original family-run textile mill and factory in Igualada, Spain.
Okay.
That's where all of our products are built. Our raw materials don't come from very far from there, so it's a pretty streamlined process. And then, you know, then we ship them to the United States and to all of our independent retailers and big box stores around the country. So it's not as much transfer of goods that you know, some people might think when we say, you know, they're made overseas, because they're actually coming from our own factory in Spain.
Yeah. I just love the fact how everything kind of matches. You know, you've got your hat, your trucker hat can match your buff, can match your gloves, and it just kind of has this awesome feel, you know? Like, sometimes I'll try to match my belt, or I'll try to match my hat, or if I'm going with my brown trout trucker hat, I'll grab my brown trout buff, or if I'll go for something more brook trout, I'll grab something with a little more color.
Mm-hmm.
So I just love being able to mix and match. And
yeah, it's an accessory. It's got to be fun, you know?
It has to be fun.
Yeah, and especially, you know, in a day where, you know, a lot of fishing apparel is pretty basic or drab, although I feel like we're coming a long way there in fishing apparel, but yeah, a little pop of color. Everyone likes
that. And functional, too, because like you say, it has that 50 UV protection.
Yeah, the new CoolNet UV Plus is UPF 50+. So basically, in a square inch, 1/50th of light can make its way through. And that's really the highest rating available to apparel right now.
And one of the things I had mentioned to you earlier, too, and I didn't even realize this because I've been using Buff for so long, but I came across another piece of neckwear, and I put it on. I think I was going to wear it skiing or something, and I realized I just couldn't breathe through the material. And it shocked me because I had been using Buffs for so long and just could put it up over my mouth for that protection and for the warmth, and I can just breathe basically normally. And so I think that just speaks volumes for your company, that you can get this cool-looking pattern, that you do get that sun protection, but you can also breathe through it at the same time.
Oh yeah, there's a lot in this seemingly basic, you know, microfiber fabric, which it is. And now the CoolNet UV Plus is made 95% recycled. 100% of the microfiber is recycled material from Reprieve. That's actually made from clear plastic bottles that are reclaimed. We get the raw material from them, make that into to our yarn to produce our product. It's incredibly soft. It's far superior than what we were making them out of previously.
Yeah.
And that four-way stretch, you know, is much more comfortable in all the different ways that most people wear their Buff product, you know, around their chin, up around the back of the head, up just over the nose.
Yeah, I love all the different ways you can wear
it. Yeah, 12 different ways, and it goes on. I mean, there's some obscure ones out there. I mean,
yeah.
I think we've talked before on other podcasts, but, you know, we talked about the coffee filter, the sling, the tourniquet, ankle brace. Now with our new one, I mean, you can even wear it as, like, you know, depending on your size, you can wear it as a waistband, and you could stick your cell phone in there and go on a run.
You have the polar fiber one now as well. It has that polar fiber on the bottom.
Yeah, great for skiing and steelheading. Yeah. Yep, I'm wearing our Gore Windstopper right now. So the first 8 inches right around my neck, that kind of susceptible area, is Gore Windstopper fabric. And then the rest is our multifunctional, you know, microfiber. And so I can still pull it up around my head. And it's great. You know, we started out today and it was in the low 40s. And now the sun's coming out and I have it, you know, just underneath my chin a little bit. When we get up and start fishing again, you know, I'll pull it up over the back of my head to protect my ears. And
sometimes what I'll do is double them up, like if I'm going skiing. I'll like throw one on to start the day, and I'll put one in my pocket.
Clean your goggles.
Yeah, clear my goggles, or put a second one on if I'm getting a little chilly. Just like layer them.
Yeah,
and that's been really effective.
I mean, it weighs nearly nothing.
Yeah,
you know, to have two on a trip can really change.
Right.
Change the game. I mean, I was just in Peru coming back from Machu Picchu, and I was on some rickety old bus. And I realized I had my buff, you know, multifunctional headwear with me. And our new materials, that four-way stretch, is more versatile in that you can tie the ends in a knot. And so what I actually did is I tied one end, just made like a nice little simple knot on it. And then I stuffed my my Sims Primaloft vest that I'm wearing right now in it. And I tied up the other end, and I had an instant pillow for the bus ride back.
Well, that's
you know,
neat.
Yeah. So you can turn it into a pillow. Speaking of, you know, the 12 plus ways to wear.
Plus ways that would go into plus.
Yeah. Yeah.
How was Machu Picchu?
Oh man, it was incredible.
It's gotta be, right?
Yeah. There's a river called the Urubamba, I believe. This river is flowing down below you. You're on, you know, you're at 8,000 feet there. Both the views and the scenery combined with the history of the place is pretty incredible.
You'd recommend it then?
Yeah. Oh, and when I was in Lima, I had a fish I never thought I would eat, but it's the arapaima.
Oh, the arapaima, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, getting to be a popular game fish
in South America.
And they called it something different. And I was like, oh, you know, what is that? I'd never heard of that fish.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about.
And I looked it up, and, well, he said something like 300 pounds. And I was like, well, what is 300 pounds? And sure enough, I'm eating a game fish that I've seen on, you know, the fly fishing film tour.
That was Ben's fish.
Oh, yeah?
Ben Forimski, the director of the fly fishing show, caught an arapaima.
Yeah.
You ate it?
Well, I hope I didn't eat this fish. I don't know what size fish they actually consume.
So maybe he was saying that you can catch them up to 300 pounds.
Yeah, yeah. But it was like, I hate to say it, but like, you know, when they say it tastes like chicken, but it was like a juicy chicken, kind of in a tangy
so
sauce.
So you just said it tastes like chicken.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. So.
So arapaima, huh?
I couldn't
imagine. Incredible fight.
Yeah, on a fly.
Well, this is so cool. Now, why don't you just give us quickly, before we close here, Casey, kind of give us just an overview of the product line. Obviously, you get the cool trucker hats. You've got the neckwear. You've got the gloves. What about when it goes across, like, on the top of your
body? Like our UVX mask.
The mask,
is great. Yeah. It covers that kind of lower area of your neck and upper shoulders. So depending on your shirt that you're wearing, it might kind of cover the front of your neck more than our multifunctional headwear.
Yeah, it goes down underneath your shirt.
Yeah, has laser-cut breathing holes. We have balaclavas. Dave Last, speaking of Trout Unlimited, he was just in New Zealand. He wore the balaclava, which is pretty extreme. I mean, it only opens up around your eyes, you know, to put your sunglasses on.
Yeah.
And he wore the camo one. In New Zealand pretty much the whole trip, and said it was just, didn't know it was there. You put on the beginning of the day, and he knows that he's protected from the sun and has that added camouflage advantage. Our stripping guards are extremely popular. I know a guide here on this river, his name's Patrick McKenzie, Instagram, I believe it's McKenzie on the Fly, on the Napa River. He goes through our stripping guards like crazy because there's so much abrasiveness in our murky water.
Yeah.
And so he uses them, he gives them to all his clients. Once you get a little bit of water, you know, on that stripping guard, it kind of helps lubricate your line. If it's kind of dry or it's heating up real quick on the boat, he'll go through a couple pairs a year and says, you know, I couldn't fish without them.
Yeah.
So, stripping guards, the multifunctional headwear for both hot conditions to extreme cold, trucker caps, some technical hats as well. Yeah. You know, to protect all those vulnerable areas that your normal apparel doesn't cover. UV arm sleeves. I think we might have talked about that at ICAST, but, you know, to take a normal, you know, cotton or tri-blend shirt, throw on arm sleeves, gloves, and your multifunctional headwear, you've got your instant fishing shirt. You strip it off at the end of the day, and you're just wearing your T-shirt again. So great for those warmer climates.
I like the gloves here, too, because we all know what sunscreen can do to your fly line. So with these here, you don't have to worry about putting that sunscreen on your hands.
Oh, incredibly important. Yeah, with PVC-coated lines, sunscreen can really damage that if you're applying it, you know, as you should. So the gloves help, and these are about 3/4 finger length on the Aqua. You know, once you get a little bit wet, too, that also helps lubricate, you know, your line, so it makes stripping really easy.
Well, super cool, Casey. It's been so fun being on the Napa River. Thank you for taking on us on this guided tour and doing some fishing and incredible host here in the Sonoma Valley area. How can our listeners find out more about the Buff?
Yeah, so you can find us. Our website is buffusa.com. You can purchase items on there. You can also find your nearest local retailer using kind of our dealer locator. You can find us on Instagram at buff_USA, Facebook. Buff. Yeah.
That's an easy
simple.
One.
And check out our Live More Now video series with both Dave Lass and Paul Rich. Tell just a great story of fishing, fatherhood, family, just a good couple minute break from the day. So that's our Live More Now series. And you can find that on our website as well.
Casey, you've been so good to Fly Fishing Journeys. And we certainly know that life is but a journey. And you know, it's been great to spend time with you here. Great products. And you've been really great to our company because you've donated this product for us to use as giveaways, and it's a product that I've always loved, and it's, you know, that's why I love partnering with companies like Buff, because they're great products, and when we can connect with great products and then use these to help promote our journey, it's something that we really appreciate. So thank you so much for the guided tour on the Napa River.
Absolutely, yeah. Maybe we'll get into a fish after this, but as we make our way down river, we are seeing more debris.
Yeah, it's a little muddy.
It's a little muddier. There's a floating plastic bottle that we're going to go pick up here in a second. And we'll make a few more casts, and then we'll grab a cold beverage afterwards.
Casey, it's been so good to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you.
You've been listening to Fly Fishing Journeys with your host, Rob Giannino. To be notified of new episodes, subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher and follow us on Facebook. And please like and share our podcast with your friends. For past episodes or to read our journal blog posts, check out flyfishingjourneys.com. Fly fishing is a journey, and we're glad you are on this journey with us.